Welcome, everyone, to this new episode of the Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Wenchow. How are you, Seth?
I'm good.
All right. Another great day of week, I should say, of news. Let's start at what I think was the biggest news this week in terms of long-term implication for Tesla and maybe even for the market as a whole. Tesla acquired a new company. A company known for manufacturing ultra capacitors, which is interesting on its own. But when we looked into it a little bit more, it looks like that might not be the main reason why Tesla purchased the company, even though it's their main business making ultra capacitors. They recently have been hyping a technology of a dry electrode, and they claim that that dry electrode technology can be incorporated into regular lithium high-end batteries cells, and it would make the entire production process more efficient, therefore cheaper, and it would it would have a higher potential for energy density, as well as a higher discharge rate and charge rate. Well, not necessarily an higher discharge rate or charge rate, but the battery will have a longer longevity if it's often discharged and charged, which is the main factor, one of the main factors that affect longevity in battery cells. So if you're able to sustain a high charge rate for a long period of time without longevity, you could technically enable higher charge rates on the vehicle without affecting that factor. And we shouldn't actually name the company. The company is named Maxwell. They're based in San Diego, and they've been around for a long time, but again, they've been mostly around for their ultracapacitor business. And Tesla acquired them for an all-stock transaction, which is mean that they're just going to issue more stocks and give them to Maxwell for their own company stock, which it was a publicly traded company. And they were trading about around $3 per share, but Tesla offered them $4.75 per share. So it's a big premium on the market price of the company. And that's part of the reason why we think that the dry electrode is really what Tesla was targeting, because the market value of the company was more related to their current existing business of selling ultra capacitors. The dry electrode wasn't yet something that contributed to their finances. It was they just developed it, and so it tells me that Tesla sees a lot of potential in that technology, which is why they acquired the company for a premium. The company comes with about 380 employees, some of them having to do with the production of the ultracapacitors, but a lot of researchers too, a bunch of chemists, a bunch of battery researchers, battery scientists, and what are your first impression on it, Seth?
So it's hard to ascertain whether it's for the ultracapacitor stuff or if it's for the standard dry battery tech. Both, you know, would obviously be helpful for Tesla. Maybe it's for both, and maybe it includes the people involved. Maybe there's some like really smart battery tech folks there. So maybe it's one of those things where they like the whole package. Obviously, Elon and JB are really smart when it comes to batteries and mm-hmm. ultra capacitors. I think something was kind of interesting, that Elon said, I believe it was a shareholder meeting 2 years ago where he said, it might've been, a earnings call, but he said something about, you know, they were asked, you know, they're putting all this money into the Gigafactory with lithium, and they were asked if there's any technology they see on the horizon that would kind of supplant lithium. And Elon's answer was, at the time, there's nothing out there except for this one thing, but everything else, no. And this one thing we're kind of checking out. I'm wondering if that one thing they're checking out was something that Maxwell was making. And maybe it's not even...
Yeah, it's still lithium ion though. So I remember the comment you're referring, but I'm not sure if he said it's something else than lithium, or it's just something else that we are doing right now, like a new lithium ion battery. Remember that?
Right, but was it something that Tesla was doing internally, or was it a new technology that they were looking at?
Yeah.
And so, you know, maybe this was it, maybe it wasn't. Another thing is Maxwell, in that document you embedded, was pretty confident that they were about to get acquired by somebody.
Well, they said there's going to be a strategic partnership for those dry electrode products. So either acquired, or they were going to get a partnership to develop to bring to market basically the dry electrode, which isn't a commercial product yet. It's just it was just something that they developed and they managed to put in some demonstration cells.
Right, but I believe they had an agreement with Volvo, I want to say.
Did they?
They had something with one of the or Geely Volvo design wind validation.
With Geely, right, which is Volvo. You're right.
So, you know, maybe this is a defensive move on Tesla's part. They don't want to give Volvo their technology. A lot of things could be the case here. I'm sure we're going to get more information as the months go by. You know, if the dry, what's it called, the dry
dry electrode
technology works its way into Tesla's cells, then you know that would make a lot of sense. But you know, there's also you know, ultra capacitors seem like a technology that's 5 or 10 years off. But I don't think it's just going to be a flip switch one day. I think it'll probably be something where you'll have a kind of like a hybrid of lithium cells and solid state capacitors. So I wonder if Tesla's thinking long term here as well.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with the ultra capacitors right now, and in terms of potential of energy density, just not viable for automotive purposes, I mean, for electric vehicles. But some people have a good point. And actually, the point is also made by Maxwell directly in their investor presentation about grid applications, which Tesla is already very much involved in, which we're talking about energy storage, stationary energy storage. They don't have a high energy density. So at first glance, you're like, oh, well, you don't need high energy density for storage. You just need a lot of capacity that doesn't need to be necessarily very dense. But what ultra capacitors are good at is very quick discharge. That they're very good at. And then I start thinking about what Tesla said about the supercharger V3, that they're going to be able to not only reduce capital expenditures with the deployment of V3, but also operational expenditures. And the bolt combined doesn't make much sense. I mean, you can see how Tesla can reduce operational expenditure by adding like power packs to each of the stations and reducing the demand charges. But then that's a lot of capital expenditures to deploy the power pack. Maybe they developed a system for ultracapacitors to which could be cheaper to deploy in smaller quantities, but they could do a big difference for like a quick, just to shave the very peak of the demand charges just for a few seconds or a minute or whatever. Sorry, I just lost.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only way I can even imagine that statement making sense. Mm-hmm. Because like clearly they're going to have some new technology. So theoretically, if they put out a battery or a capacitor bank that has you know, enough quantity to shave off the demand charges, then then maybe the costs go down enough that, you know, they more than break even on the whole installation. I guess, I mean, I can't even imagine another scenario there. So, and that's twisting words a little bit, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah, it's definitely a very interesting acquisition. And Tesla doesn't do that many of those acquisitions. I mean, there was Grohmann that was interesting in the manufacturing front. Perbix, also manufacturing front. So there's not, didn't really acquire a lot of technology companies. I mean, recently I probably acquired some transportation company, like to actually transport your cars. But a pure technology company, that's very interesting.
Yep, so I agree.
We'll keep an eye out in the coming months on how Maxwell ends up being integrated into Tesla's business. But we also published a paper from Maxwell about the dry electrode that we posted to Electric, so you can check that out, where they actually released some data about the demonstration cell that they have. They show the discharge rate of the cells. They show also the longevity of the cells. It's pretty interesting where they show that it keeps about 90% of its capacity over around 1500 cycles, close to 1500 cycles, which you could technically extrapolate to basically 30 years of battery pack use for a vehicle, which is very good. And after that 30 years, you still have 90%, so you're not done yet. So that's very fun. And the degradation really flattens out after that 1500 too, so it takes another like 1000 to get to lose another 5% or so, which is nice. And in terms of energy density, they are claiming that right now they are achieving over 300 watt hour in the cell, and we estimate that Tesla is around 260 to 70 per cell. So just that alone, it's a good 12% improvement. But they see a potential for up for 500 watt hour per kilograms, which would be like 90% improvement basically on what Tesla has right now. They didn't disclose a timeline for that, because right now they're saying it's just over 300 somehow. But I sort of have a feeling that might be something they would need for like a Tesla Semi or something like that to work. And we know that the battery pack for Tesla Semi has to be huge, and there's of course a weight limitation for the Tesla Semi, because you want to optimize the weight of your load and not the weight of the tractor. So yeah, a ton of good stuff for sure. Another big news that came up this week for Tesla is the price reduction for the Model 3. So whole version of the Model 3 got $1,100 price reduction, bringing the price down of the mid-range version to just $42,900. And Tesla sent us a statement about that, saying that the price change is primarily as a result of ending the reformer program, which costs far more than we realize. That's an interesting statement. Tesla is able to lower the price of Model 3 by $1,100.
The referral program was operating in some sort of void. It still feels like that, where like yeah, nobody's running the show.
Like, no one made any calculation whatsoever. And I mean, there's different ways to look at it. I mean, because if you look at the actual, like, what you would get from the referral program as a buyer, I mean, most recently was 6 months of free supercharging. I'd take that $1,100 over that 6 months of free supercharging any day. So,
yeah, that's nothing.
If I bought a Model 3 in the last few weeks and Tesla's excuse for the price drop is that, but you get 6 months of free supercharging. I'd be like, come on, now it's not 6 months of supercharging.
Even Test Loop couldn't make money on that.
Like, yeah, you'd be like nonstop driving the car all the time and supercharging all the time to get that money. It's though with the latest price increase, who knows?
Yeah, but maybe a little bit.
So there's that, but that's for a customer perspective. From Tesla's perspective, thing is, it was depending who gave that referral for Tesla. If it was someone like you and I, who not anymore because we've already maxed out our Roadster, but someone who had access to the Roadster discount.
It's $5,000 per.
Yeah, if someone buys a Model 3 from them, then it's directly like a $5,000 minus Tesla's gross margin on the Roadster, which we don't know at all. So let's just say $5,000 just for simplicity. That $1,100 makes a lot more sense for them for sure.
Right.
But that's not everyone that was using the referral code. I mean, if it was just someone that, what was the first, price of the program that I was sending?
Did you get a wall charger?
I think there's a second or third one.
Yeah, was it?
I think the first one was sending a picture. No, was sending a picture in space. Maybe. Was that the last one? I don't know. I have no idea on how much, guys. probably with SpaceX, it was maybe SpaceX didn't even charge. Wouldn't even charge Tesla for it.
Yeah. So clearly, the $1,100 was the referral rewards, which, like, I have to say again, it seemed like, and to this day, it seems like nobody's running the ship in the referral program because, clearly, somebody showed the books to Elon about the referral program, and he was like, "Holy crap!"
Fly on the wall of that meeting.
Well, it reminds me of that one video. I can't remember if it was like Who Killed the Electric Car or what, where he walks into the room full of roadsters. It's like a huge garage, and he's like, "What the heck? What's going on here? Like, dude, weren't you looking at inventory?" But you know, he's got other things going on. He's got a lot of SpaceX and Twitter and stuff. So, sure. You know, clearly he had no idea what was going on. Somebody showed him, hey, like, there's a big cost right here that is sucking up a lot of our margin. And he's like, what are you talking about? Referral program? Oh, you know, whatever, little thing. And he looked at the numbers. He's like, holy crap! And then tweeted out, that thing's over.
We
knew that for a long time that it was unsustainable. And you know, the fact that we haven't got like most of our referral stuff from like 2 or 3 years ago means that it's not really running the way it should be.
Yeah, it doesn't look like they've been putting a lot of effort into it. And you would have thought that instead of just canceling it, they just have refreshed it with something that make more sense. I mean, because even though we say that it costs a lot, if you look as a whole, and Ben Solins has a good video on that right now on his channel where he tried to compare the cost of the program to other costs of other companies automakers budget for advertising, and on a per revenue basis the referral program was definitely very successful. They didn't lose any money on that. It's just that it wasn't very efficient at the end. It wasn't very efficient as soon as they included the Model 3 in it.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're trying to give a $5,000 reward to a car that's got a, you know, maybe a $5,000 margin. Just doesn't make sense. I mean, what they should have done is move it back to the S and X, or maybe, you know, you need, instead of 50 to get a Roadster, you need 500. You know, something like that would make a whole lot more sense. But
I mean, you know, the thing is, when they included the Model 3, it's like the Model 3 owners couldn't refer someone. So that wasn't fair. I mean, I think you needed to include the Model 3 owners in the program. But then they didn't think about it enough. Like they were, okay, we just include them, and then they can refer other Model 3 sales. Right. That's where they made a mistake. And I see where the logic is, because of course it makes sense to include also the Model 3 program, because what are those Model 3 owners going to refer? They're going to refer their own car. They're going to they're going to show people their own car and do that. But then that really went out of control. So maybe it would have been something like the Model 3 sales, you still get an incentive from it, like whatever, like little prizes you get from referring a Model 3 sale, but it doesn't count it to the Roadster, or it doesn't count it to some of the other bigger prizes. Those are just for the Model S and X, or for a while it was just the Model 3 Performance. It wasn't all Model 3. That also made sense because Tesla is making a lot of money on Model 3 Performance. Yep. But yeah, there was a ton of ways to get at it better than Tesla did for this one. So like, well, I say it often, Tesla is not perfect. I know that a bunch of Tesla fans don't like to hear that, but they make plenty of mistakes.
So, and then back to the bigger point of the article, which is that they reduced the price down to $42,900. Mm-hmm. I was surprised, even though I shouldn't be, that how many people were like, Tesla can't make any sales at... I mean, there's two sides. There's one is Tesla has to keep dropping the price because they don't have the subsidy anymore, and they're in trouble. And then there's the other side where Tesla promised a $35,000 car and they can't deliver it. But like, both of those things can't square. What appears is like Tesla's every time they can kind of drop the price, they drop it a little bit more, and they're, it's not just going to be like one day where they flip on a $5,000 or $35,000 car. They're going to reduce the price of this car probably at least one or two more times. And then with the new battery pack, I think so. And then I think with the new battery pack, the smaller battery pack, the roof, I mean, you know, if they can sell this car for $42,900, I feel like they're getting close to it.
Yeah, well, that's my point. And that doesn't go with what you just said, because I look at this car and I see they keep reducing the price of this car. Now it's just $43,000. I mean, it still has a 62 kilowatt hour battery pack in it. Make that a 50 or something kilowatt hour pack.
Right, so that saves like $3,000 or $4,000 right there.
That saves $3,000. Put the regular interior in it instead of the more premium materials and whatever. Right. The center console is different and a bunch of things are different. Change all that, and I mean, you gotta get pretty damn close to $35,000 at this point, right?
Right. So it seems like they're getting close.
Yeah. So I think Tesla needs to stop messing with their pricing structure and just focus on making that $35,000 car with the regular interior, and maybe with the regular interior, maybe don't release the $35,000 pack right away. Release the regular interior and bring that price down to $40,000, for example, or something like that, or whatever it's going to be. So
the new battery pack is kind of the big question. Like what? Because Elon mentioned that instead of just like pulling out every other battery or whatever, they're going to have an entirely new pack.
Entirely new modules, I think, just the module. Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting in itself. You know, could be smaller. It's going to weigh less. If it weighs less, then theoretically the car will be more efficient. All kinds of things, things like that happen. Maybe it's not even 50. Maybe it's 45 kilowatt hour. And that gets them to 220 miles. I don't know.
That'd be impressive as hell, though. But yeah, from my standpoint, I say, stop messing with the pricing structure all the time of your existing car. Just, you want to make it cheaper? Make the car cheaper with the base option that you've been promising for a long time.
Right.
I mean, that's, I think it's starting to alienate a lot of customers on that front.
Yeah, I know it doesn't feel great when you buy a Tesla and then a day later or a week later or a month later, they drop the price significantly. They've already done it started 44, then they raised it up to 46, then back down to 44, and now 42.9.
Yeah, their pricing is just weird. I mean, they do that all the time. The 44, 46 makes no sense. Anyway, that's for U.S. prices, because Tesla is also launching a vehicle in Europe and China right now. And the first shipment arrived in Belgium this week. The first of the, currently there's like four ships going to Europe with Tesla vehicles. Sorry, Model 3 specifically. The first of those ships arrived at the port. Was that Monday? Tuesday, the 5th, yeah. Then the next day, Tesla started the deliveries, but apparently it wasn't very a smooth first day of delivery because, well, first of all, it was surprising that they could do it like the next day too, because I mean, this unloading a ton of cars from a cargo ship and preparing them for delivery normally takes a while, but looks like Tesla is trying to hurry up because they know that they have other ships coming, so they have to have a quick turnaround. A bunch of buyers in Europe reached out to us saying that even though they had delivery dates in the coming week, they were told to go to Tesla Tilburg, the factory in Tilburg, which the Tesla use as some kind of distribution center for the Model 3 deliveries. They were told, you're going to be able to take delivery tonight. So a bunch of people made the trip to Tilburg to be able to take delivery. And once they arrived there, most people were turned around saying that they weren't ready for the delivery, which is, of course, disappointing. Some of them will even offer like dinner because of making the trip without getting their car. But Tesla still did a few deliveries, started that day, they confirmed to us. So they did a few of them. And now they are starting again today, apparently, with another bigger batch. And Elon even made the trip to Zeebrugge now to oversee the whole rollout, because it's apparently getting complicated We're going to have more on that in the coming days or even hours.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously, if Elon's showing up, A, things aren't going super smoothly. Like, he probably feels the need to make sure he's there doing his thing. But also, you know, there's probably some photo ops or other
celebratory opportunities. But they already did the first delivery, so it's not like the keys ending out the ceremony or something like that. So
yeah, that's true.
It would be weird if they do. Let's celebrate the second day of deliveries with Elon giving you the keys. I mean, I'm sure he's still going to do a round of the distribution center and delivery center and for photo op, but still, I think it's more about figuring out the whole logistic issues.
Yeah.
All right, so now you have the actual production Model 3 European version of the world in Europe. And what came out of it is that, of course, those cars are CCS, have a CCS connector instead of the Type 2 with the Tesla's own proprietary system in them. So those people can go to public charging stations with CCS and charge there, including those that have a charge rate higher than Tesla's own supercharger. But Tesla was always saying that the bottleneck in charging the Model 3 or any other vehicle was the vehicle itself. We've seen that the supercharger is actually rated for 145 kilowatts, and Tesla's vehicles were always only charging at 120 max. And the first production European version that stopped at Fastned earlier today. Fastned, of course, is really quick at they spot when a new car is on their network, and they chart the charging cycle of it to see how it goes. And they released it a few hours ago, and you see the Model 3 going to up to 126 kilowatts.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird. If you look at the graph, it kind of was hanging out at 124, and then right at around 50%, it bumped up to 126, and then it started its pretty steep climb.
Pretty steep indeed.
After 50%, and then obviously down to 25% or 25 kilowatts near, I guess, 80% charge. I wonder if it's a cabling thing. Like, I wonder if CCS has a thicker cable that allows it just a little bit bigger of a charge, or what. It sounds like Tesla was challenging that finding a little bit, saying that their chargers can charge much faster, which, you know, we've heard tell of people getting kind of 121 or 122, but I think Tesla offered up somebody who got 128 at some point somewhere.
All right. Well, so what happened is that after that came out, at the same time, a bunch of other people also reported higher charge rate than 120, and not just on Model 3. Tesla's Chinese vehicle now have the Chinese protocol on it, the Chinese standard, and someone spotted a Model S with 127, someone spotted a Model X with 128 kilowatts, which was the highest we've seen so far. So I think it's weird that that's all coming out now at the same time. Higher charge rates than we have ever seen with proof before. So I reached out to Tesla, and Tesla says, nah, that's normal. We've had charging supercharging station capable of doing that for a while now, and the vehicle were doing it. And I mean, I've been following Tesla pretty closely over the years, and I've never seen 128 kilowatt on a supercharger.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about a matter of 8 kilowatts. Like, we've seen 120. 8 kilowatts is a little bit faster, but I think what's kind of exciting is the opportunity that with the V3 superchargers, we're expecting to see significant improvement, like up to close to 175, 200 kilowatts. So it's kind of interesting that we're starting to see the number climb after so long at 120.
Yeah, because it's happening now at the same time. So a bunch of different versions of the car, well, models. So the speculation is that there's been a battery pack upgrade or something that now it's capable of taking more.
I don't know if it's the battery pack or the cabling or what.
Yeah, well, there's, it looks like there was a bottleneck that has been figured out. Now, it was all achieved on non-supercharger stations, so you'd think maybe the superchargers were a bottleneck, but we knew for a while that the supercharger was rated 145, so couldn't really have been it. But then Tesla is telling me, no, Tesla vehicle have been achieving that at supercharger for a while. I've asked them, show me the proof, show me the which, just tell me which supercharger it is, and we'll get a car there in no time. But they haven't gotten back to me since then. So that's a bit weird. Yeah. We'll follow back on that for sure.
All right, what else we got here?
Gigafactory 1, I just posted a quick report because we look into some job listing from Tesla. And there was an interesting one, job listing at Lathrop, how do you pronounce that? Lathrop?
I think Lathrop, yeah.
Lathrop, so this has been expanding in Lathrop. They have a bunch of buildings there now, and they're just about to open a gigantic new one. And they've moved their casting facilities there, and they're setting up new casting lines and a foundry. But one of the listing was interesting because they were asking for a process engineer, process technician there. And as part of the job was also to set up casting lines at Gigafactory 1. So it looks like this is going to have a new casting facility directly at Gigafactory 1. And of course, the casting line can be used to make body parts for cars. And recently, we've been hearing that Tesla is most likely building Model Y at Gigafactory 1, even though they haven't confirmed it completely yet. They're saying that it's the most likely place where it's going to happen. So I thought it was an interesting little snippet of information.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting.
And they've also been saying that they're going to start investing in tooling for the Model Y this year. So that plays into it. All right.
Yeah, it's kind of...
Go ahead, Evan Markham.
I was going to say, it's kind of nice looking at the Gigafactory. There's not a lot of space constraints. Like, they could literally go in any direction, like almost a mile, and, you know, continue building out or putting in parking lots or whatever. And they're not really space constrained like they are in Fremont or pretty much anywhere else. So they must like the Gigafactory in that respect.
Yeah, but also at the same time, weren't you thinking that should they need to, because they haven't expanded on that building, even though, like you said, they could. They haven't expanded on it for like 2 years now. Do you think they need to start building Model Y there? It's going to need some new section being brought up to house the Model Y.
I would imagine. I don't know. I don't know how it works there. I mean, they could put up some tents. You know, they're very creative in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
But looking at the, you know, I'm just looking at the image on this story, and like,
that's an image that you took with your drone.
Yeah, I mean, they could go a lot of different directions in building more space. They could set up a line on the, you know, left side or the right side of it, and, you know, they still probably wouldn't have any issues. I mean, they're putting solar panels on the roof, so there's the power thing. I'm sure they're going to have batteries. They're going to have their own, you know, they have those big water tanks in the back. I think they've got a pretty good setup over there.
Yeah. Still over in the middle, look out for an expansion in the coming months, because I think it's going to happen.
Yep.
Moving on to Tesla open an Amazon store. All right, this one was weird because we first found out about that store coming up, which we thought was interesting because Tesla, of course, has its own teslashop.com. And that's where they sell all their accessories and their merchandise. And it's not the most appreciated retail effort from Tesla. A lot of people had a lot of issues with it, with fulfillment, with deliveries, especially international deliveries. Tesla couldn't make it work very well for that. And so an Amazon store with Amazon taking care of the full fulfillment would be a welcome improvement. Now, what happened is that we reported on the new store launching when we found out about it, and a bunch of other publications reblogged our article, so it went viral really quick.
Without linking, of course.
Of course, because they just found it by their home without
coincidence. Article.
And right after that, Tesla ended up shutting down the store. So starting looking into why they shut it down and everything. I cannot go into the details about it, but apparently there was some confusion about like who approved of the store, like who let that happen and everything. So I thought maybe it was something to do with like Elon not knowing about it and like, oh, I don't want to get in bed with Bezos and something, because we know for a while that there was some kind of competitive edge between Elon and Jeff Bezos because of especially because of Blue Origin and SpaceX. Like Bezos threw some shade at SpaceX for like right. It was pretty weird.
I had forgotten about that.
Yeah, because Blue Origin claimed that they beat SpaceX into making a reusable rocket because they shut up the rocket and made it land. But they just made it like one quick jump to space and back. They didn't go to orbit and then land a booster that boosted an actual spacecraft to orbit, which is what SpaceX did. And it's of course the difference between an actual usable product and just like a nice demonstration to show investors and the public, whatever. But then when SpaceX actually did it, Bezos went like, oh, welcome to the club of a reusable rocket or something, which Elon didn't really like.
And you can see why, really.
Yeah. Anyway, so since then, there's been some rumors that they don't like each other, but I think that those are confirmed. So we sort of thought of that when the shop came offline, but it's been back online now for the past 2 days. So a bunch of just merchandise, just had power rolls and iPhone cases and stuff. But if it goes well, I see Tesla going to shift maybe more of their accessories, even their vehicle accessories and their charging accessories on Amazon, because Amazon is becoming a real hub for EV charging. They have a ton of them there. They even started a service where they use their happiness guarantee, the service with the electrician to install those stations and everything. So I think there's something there.
Yeah, it's a good play for Amazon. Amazon's got this network of installers that do dishwashers and refrigerators and appliances and pretty much anything that they sell that can be installed. So by extension, you know, they have those electricians that can just put in a high-powered either plug or high-powered line directly for a Tesla charger. So it makes a lot of sense. It's easy. Amazon takes care of the work. Most people have like Amazon Prime accounts. Like, kind of all fits together pretty nicely.
Yeah, but it's not there yet, though. Hopefully, it is at some point, and selfishly too, because we get the commission referred to Amazon.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah,
they're not giving us roasters.
Yeah, it's not a full roaster, but it's still around your hands of month.
Did you make any money off the original post?
I didn't make as much money because they shut it down real quick, so they didn't make right. And Tesla also probably left a lot of money on the table because, yeah, our post was pretty popular, but we shut down the post right away. But there was also like dozens of other websites that reblogged it. So I think they left a lot of money on the table on this one.
Yeah, probably.
All right, the Electrify America deal. So that's interesting because we touched on that a little bit earlier. Tesla reached a deal with Electrify America to deploy power packs at 100 charging stations, Electrify America charging station. So Electrify America is starting to figure out that demand charges are killing them. So they want to reduce those demand charges and add the energy storage at those stations. And they're going to use Tesla's battery pack, apparently, at over 100 stations. They're going to have a 350 kilowatt hour capacity.
I mean, it makes sense for a couple of reasons. One, Tesla knows this business of, you know, the demand charges, how to kind of build batteries to kind of edge off the high demand charges. They're obviously in the game. Tesla's charge or can be charged at Electrify America stations. Mm-hmm. So they're involved there. I'm sure like Sonnen Battery and a few other battery, Panasonic, whatever, Samsung all have batteries that can do the same job. But Tesla's expertise in this particular area probably helped them get the contract.
Yeah, it is interesting though that I mean they see that those installations will happen this year. So, we know that the V3 is coming and the V3s probably have an energy storage component to it. But it would be funny if Tesla ended up installing more energy storage at Electrifarmica station because before they installed them at their own superchargers. I'm not 100% sure that's going to be the case yet because again we think that energy storage component is going to come with V3, but interesting nonetheless.
Yep.
All right. Who's losing range on the right now with the cold weather and the polar vortex and whatnot?
I think I'm definitely losing. I'm definitely losing range, but not 41% of my range.
Not 41%. So a lot of people. There's been a ton of articles in the past 2 weeks because of that, and a lot of it is coming from like not so trusted sources. But the most trusted one was AAA that released a new study, pretty in-depth study of how really cold temperature affect the driving range of electric cars. And they claim that on average, it's 41% drop in range at 20 degrees Fahrenheit, which is minus 6 Celsius, I think.
Cold.
It is cold, but not that cold, depending on where you're located. So it was surprising that it's 41% on average. But what they did is that the methodology has been put into question a little bit because they didn't know a dyno and they simulated the hair around it and everything. So it's not, and of course that's a combination. It's not just the effect on the coal and the battery pack, but it's also the effect of using the HVAC system, the heating of the car. So it's both combined. And they use 5 different vehicles. They use the Tesla Model S, 75D, the VW e-Golf, the Leaf, the BMW i3, and the Chevy Bolt EV. If you go to electric right now, you can actually see the difference between all the cars. And because they tested the on the 20 Fahrenheit, but also they also tested on 95 Fahrenheit. Which what is 95? It's like it's very hot, but it's like 30, I think 30 Celsius or something. Like on a very hot day.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So the one that performed the worst is the i3. It's the i3s that they use. Hey, they tried the i3s before. I even could try the i3s. Yeah.
I actually had it for a little while. It's
yeah, nice. The i3s?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm thinking about the new one with 120 amp hours. Though.
No, I didn't have that one yet.
Yeah. All right. 50%.
You know what's weird is the Nissan Leaf, it looks like in the heat, did really well. Yeah.
It did the best also with the code.
Crazy.
Yeah, not when it's charging. Just talking right. About.
I guess maybe because it's not wasting a lot of energy on active cooling or heating.
Yeah,
it's just going
taking it like all it is. It's not trying to combat it. So for the longevity, it's not as good. But right. For the actual performance in the short term, yeah, for sure, it's going to be more efficient. But anyway, the i3 got the worst of it. They claim a 50% drop at 20 Fahrenheit, and. Over 20% also had heat loss. Anyway, but we reported on it too, especially for the Model S, because Tesla actually disputed their numbers.
Yeah. So what is Tesla like? 38%
loss. Yeah, Tesla. The shows about 38%, and
that's a Model S, 75D.
And about 15% loss at 95 Celsius, Fahrenheit too. So. Yeah. Tesla did release a number for 95 degrees. They said it's roughly 1%. So they said they are completely wrong about that. Like 15 to 1%, it's a big difference. They say that they were... what did they use exactly? Anywhere, it was anywhere near that percentage of degradation at 20 degrees. So they didn't release the actual... data, but they said that from the real world data of their fleet, they can tell that it's not. Sorry, I'm losing my voice.
Yeah,
I'm a little sick right now. It's nowhere near the what AAA has been claiming. I asked, give me the actual data. If you pull the data, like tell me what it is on average, but they didn't want to. Okay, but from my own experience, and I tell you, you agree with your own experience too, Seth. I've never seen 40% at minus 6 degrees. At minus 20 Celsius, I've seen about 40% of range loss. But I don't start thinking too much about range loss until about that minus six, minus five. But in my head, it's closer to 20%, like not 38 or something like that. And then minus 20, like, yeah, for sure, you got to think about it a lot.
I have the same experience where I don't even consider it until it's below actual freezing. You know, I do drive to Vermont quite frequently, and it's often below freezing there. And it does, you know, we do lose a lot of range, but it's always a factor of a bunch of things, including, like, is it snowing? Is it raining? You know, the roads, wind, like, there's so many factors involved. You know, like, are we, you know, like, if I go up with just my boys, I'll have the weather, you know, the interior at like 65 degrees or something. But if my wife's there, it's going to be like 72. So, like, those kind of things make huge difference. I don't think it's as dire as the AAA numbers are. It's certainly something to consider. And another thing is with the Chevy Bolt that we have, it'll, in the winter time, it goes down from 238 range to like 140. But that's because I drive it just a little bit. Like, I drive, you know, to a coffee shop and then to the gym and then home. That's pretty much my commute. That's, you know, like around 5 or 6 miles, and I have to heat up the car and go over a bunch of hills and heat up the car again, go over a bunch of hills, and then do that a third time. So the fact that I'm getting a really low range is a factor of not just the temperature, but also how I'm driving it. If I drove like 50 miles, actually I drove to JFK in the Bolt the other day, and it started out saying I'd have 125 mile range, and by the time I got to JFK, it still said I had 125 mile range. So,
yeah, that's, I mean, that also shows that you need to revise the calculation system to be like a little bit more
right
accurate. But, like,
yeah,
but yeah, so you can see the full studies on electric, and 640 people commenting on it. It was quite the controversial one.
That's actually not that many comments. We're getting those on. We're getting quite a few comments. We should open up a forums one of these days.
Trying to make a product announcement set?
No, almost.
Yeah. Another big article that was a lot of comments too. Republican senators announced a new bill that would kill the federal tax rate for electric vehicle and would have an additional tax on them. On top of it, so yeah, it's so again our good friend, John Barrasso from Wyoming. It's the second time that he's trying to push that bill, and this time he's backed also by Republican Senator Roberts from Kansas and Hensley from also Wyoming. And they're trying to kill that bill again to kill the federal tax rate altogether. So there's been a bunch of other efforts we reported to also that are trying to just refresh it, and Tesla is backing one of those with the Coalition for It, with Nissan, with the GM and others. But the Republicans, and some Republicans were on board on it, but Barrasso and his friends are not. And I'm sure it's a coincidence, but oil and gas companies is one of his main backers. So I'm sure it's a coincidence. Mm-hmm. Including Murray Energy, oh boy. Murray Energy, you remember Murray?
The
coal guy. That's a genius. Close friend to Trump, too, apparently. He posted an opinion piece on Fox, and I'm quoting from his opinion piece here. Never before has the electric car consumer had so many choices. Taxpayer, on the other end, don't have any choice. Every time one of these cars sells, the U.S. taxpayers must pay for it, must help pay for it. I mean, he's right. There's a lot more choices for EVs now, so it wouldn't be the end of the world if the federal tax rate goes away for EVs. EVs will survive, EVs will prevail, they will represent the entirety of the market at some point. But that's not the point. The point is, what do you want to incentivize? And the answer can be nothing. I don't want to incentivize anything. I want a complete free market. All right. That doesn't mean killing the federal tax credit for EVs, because if you do that, then it means is that you're not incentivizing EV sales, but you are incentivizing gas-powered car sales, because we know that they have on-price externalities to gas-powered cars. We're talking about the impact of the carbon emission that they emit. So you're going in the wrong way. I completely understand. If you're a climate change denier, basically, if you think there's no impact to burning fossil fuels, then of course that makes sense, because you don't think that gas-powered cars are incentivized, even though oil companies are getting plenty of direct subsidies too. We could get into that, but we don't even need to, because we are human beings of average intelligence. We're able to understand that CO2 emissions have a direct impact on the environment, which has a direct financial impact on everyone in the world, including American taxpayers. So we know that gas-powered cars are subsidized by not pricing those carbon emissions. So it makes no sense. A statement makes just no sense, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you're a climate denier, then you don't need any kind of incentives. But there's even there's even tax breaks on oil to get oil into, far off places. It's subsidized by the government. So, whereas electricity, you don't really need to subsidize that, because it goes over transmission lines, which are, expensive to put up. But once they're up, you don't need any, much infrastructure at all. So, not as complex as it needs to be. Or not as complex as it is. It seems very obvious that gasoline should be taxed way higher than it is. And if that was the case, then you wouldn't need any EV incentives.
Yeah.
So that's the correct way to do it. But we're not willing to tax gas any higher. So I think the EV incentives make sense in the short term.
Yeah, it's the best solution we have now, because it's right. Easier to make that passed, which would already pass, it's just like killing it, though I'd be for a reform of it. So it's the best we have. And if you are introducing something to kill it without introducing a carbon tax, then you're doing it the wrong way. You're in the wrong. As simple as that. There's just no other way to look at it. I can absolutely be for killing any kind of subsidies for electric vehicle, as long as there's a carbon tax account with it. Or carbon price. People are trying to push the carbon price line instead of calling it tax. I mean, where is the money going to? If the money is going to the government, then it's a tax. Okay. Yeah, and on top of it, Barroso's bill also include an annual tax for alternative fuel vehicles to replace the lost revenue from the gas tax. Which I understand, but
there's a tax on electricity too. So yeah. what really needs to happen is that tax money from the electric bill needs to go to the roads,
or a percentage of it. Yeah, you need to figure out the percentage that goes to EVs and then tax people based on that. That'd be more fair than just an annual. And even then, a lot of people are making the point though that, like, 99% of the damage on the roads is actually being done by trucks and vehicles.
Heavy trucks.
Yeah, it's something that weighs more than 5,000 pounds or something. So
like,
I do think that ideally you should base it on that. And there are electric vehicles that weigh more than 5,000 pounds. And when Tesla semis comes and things like that, I would agree that there should be a way to have them being taxed directly linked to the highway infrastructure funds, but I think, like you said, that would be best done based on electricity. So, like the mega charger, whatever they're called, maybe something like that could calculate how much energy that used to charge a Tesla Semi, and have a tax on that electricity specifically. But yeah, an annual tax on EVs like that, it just makes no sense at this point.
Yep.
All right, do we have something else? Volkswagen.
Volkswagen.
Volkswagen officially announced that they want other automakers to use the MEB platform. That's about it. I mean,
it seems like a nice platform. It looks like every other EV platform.
What do we do about the platform, really? I don't know.
I guess they're just throwing darts, I guess.
Yeah,
like, we spent all this money building this thing.
Maybe, use it, please.
Maybe Mazda, you know, Mazda, they don't have any kind of EV ambition. Or Ford, Ford, I guess, makes a lot of sense, actually.
They're the one that's been rumored to. Well, they actually are officially looking into it, but. I mean, the only thing that I would agree with on that front is that Volkswagen is definitely investing a ton of money to bring the MEB platform to mass volume production, like a lot of production. So that should reduce the overall price of the platform. So in that sense, if you're an automaker and you're looking at your vehicle programs now and the price don't make sense because you need to invest a ton in making the platform, then maybe, okay, you're going to look at Volkswagen and say, all right, I'm going to use your platform because you're able to make it for cheaper. But then you don't have your own all-electric vehicle platform. You're not an automaker anymore. You're like a buddy
part. You're just a marketing company.
Yeah. No, yeah, you're a brand. You're an automotive brand with some buddy parts production, and that's it. So I think that's insane because you cannot let Volkswagen own the entire electric car industry aside from like Tesla and whoever other company are actually investing in large scale production. There are not many of them. Volkswagen is certainly one of them.
Yep.
You want to talk about the Green Deal a little bit?
Oh yeah. So this week on Monday and Tuesday, I was in San Francisco at Bloomberg New Energy Finance. It's a great show. There were quite a few EV companies. Charging companies represented. Audi was there, and you know our friends that we worked with on the e-tron launch, and a couple other interesting companies. Volkswagen was there, Porsche was there, although it was Porsche Finance, which doesn't really have anything to do with the car, and just the whole ecosystem, and even companies like Shell and Chevron were there with their, you know, we're not that bad kind of stuff. But, you know, like sadly, I didn't really learn anything that I didn't know because I've been, you know, knee deep in this stuff for so long. There was, you know, some times where it was kind of good to hear people thinking like I do. And there were some alternative points, which I don't think I was convinced of. But it's just one of those good times to go. And it was nice to see Chris Payne of Who Killed the Electric Car and Revenge of the Electric Car, and he's got a new AI movie out now. And it sounds like he might be back into the electric car content area soon, which we're hoping to find out more about. But it was great to meet him in person. And, you know, we'll talk to some of our colleagues from Bloomberg and other outlets as well. So those are always great. I think there's a New York based one coming up in a couple months. And they do one in like Shanghai as well. So, that was good. Unfortunately, you know, there was a couple press releases. I think, DHL and, had a couple of things and we wrote about that. And then EVgo, made a couple announcements, which weren't, you know, anything crazy, but, certainly newsworthy. So, you know, not a lot of news, but a good event nonetheless.
Yeah, they have some good research. I just think they're not really aggressive enough with your prediction, but Bloomberg, what are the analyst group called? Bloomberg?
It's New Energy Finance.
New Energy Finance, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have some good research. I just think that they could be a little bit more aggressive in their projections. All right. Well, they do review it every year, but like the I'm like 5 years ahead of them in my prediction.
Yeah.
So in 5 years, they're gonna catch up to me. yeah, that's pretty much it for us this week, guys. Thanks a lot for listening. Thanks a lot for watching. You can can subscribe to YouTube to watch our videos live and see all our other YouTube content coming up, which we are trying to do more of. And you can also subscribe on iTunes on your podcast app. You can also leave a review on your podcast app if you like the podcast. That's helps a lot too. And yeah, we're going to see you same place, same time next week. And hopefully my voice is going to be a little better now. All right. Ciao.